Okay, so today is going to be the last year of the season. Last year of Brahma, the last year of the season, and really the last year in Hilchos Shabbos. We've been learning Shabbos for the last 3 years. For 2 years, we did just about all the practical malachas. We covered like 20 malachas or so. And then this past year, we've been doing the klolim of Hilchos Shabbos. We covered all the major klolim, malacha, shenshiyat legufo, mekalkel, kalachiyab, sekresha, misasek. And we've been working on Grama, so this is a big CM we'll be having today. That's why Alfredo is joining us. Okay, fine. So today, Mirtz Hashem will be the final year of the season, and the next year we'll start a new limud. So we've been working on the principle of Grama. We have this halakha that the malachos have to be done in a direct manner in order to be chayiv, we call asiya. If you do a malacha in an indirect manner, it's called a grama, and it's going to be certainly mutter in the Torah. And at worst, it's a very light issur de rabbanan. It's not such a severe issur de rabbanan. We waive it, makom hefsed, things like that. So that's the principle of grama. And the issue we've been working on for the last 2 weeks is trying to pin down when is something called direct activity and asur de raisa, when is something called grama, where it's going to be mutter min haTorah. And today, we're going to focus on one last angle of that discussion, trying to distinguish between direct activity and indirect activity. And we're going to do this by starting with the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Ayin Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is discussing the Isser of Ritzicha. As we know, this is one of our three cardinal sins, thou shalt not kill. And the Gemara brings down the following situation. Let's say Reuven, you know, our assailant, we're going to have an assailant, we'll call him Reuven, ties up a victim on an incline. This is going to get a little gruesome, so I don't mean to give you guys nightmares, but that's how Gemara works. So Reuven ties up his victim on an incline, and he then goes to the top of the incline, and he removes a barrier that was holding back some water. And by removing the barrier, so now the water comes gushing down this incline, and it drowns and kills our victim. So Gemara says that the halacha in this situation depends. If the victim was killed by the koach rishon, meaning the first gush of water, if it was the first gush of water that killed the victim, so then Reuven is going to be chayiv mizvah. On the other hand, if the first gush of water that was released doesn't kill the victim, and it's only the later water, you know, the second, the third, the subsequent water that kills the victim, so then Reuven's going to be putter. He's not going to be chayv mizvah. That's the Gemara there in Sanhedrin. And so what we learn from this Gemara is two principles. These are two basic principles from this Gemara. Principle number one is that there's a concept of Brahma by Ritzicha. What does the Gemara say? When the person removes the barrier, if the first gush doesn't kill the victim, and only one of the subsequent gushes of water drowns the victim, our assailant is going to be putter. It's not chayv mizvah. Why is it not chayiv misa? Because there's a concept of Brahma by Ritzicha. In order to be chayiv misa, so the attacker needs to directly kill the victim. If he indirectly kills the victim, so he's not going to be chayiv misa. Now, obviously, it's certainly absolutely awesome to do, and we're not going to give the guy shlishi or be his friend anymore. But in terms of the chayiv misa, so there's certain high standards to get a chayiv misa, and you're not going to achieve those standards by if it's done in a manner of Brahma. So that is the first principle we see from this Gemara. Yeah. Why wouldn't it drown him, you're saying?
I'm saying, like,
how would it? Oh, okay. You're asking what's called the first gush, what's called the second gush? Like, how to distinguish?
Yeah.
Okay, so there are three different shittos. It's a big machlok shonim between Rashi and the Yad Ramah. It's how what's called the first gush and what's called subsequent gushes. So, to be honest, whatever you're conceiving is probably correct in some shita. Some shittos hold that it's the first. Some shittos hold that it's the first crescendo, before it hits the floor and starts falling further. That's the koach rishon.
But if the guy is standing, that koach rishon might go to drown. The speed
doesn't hit my ground. However, it's killing. It doesn't have to be drowned. Whatever. However, this water kills the guy. But okay. But whatever it is. So the Gemara is distinguishing between the first gush and the second gush. I admit that I'm being ambiguous because whatever their thought of the Jesus had to distinguish between the two. Fine. So that's the first principle we see from this Gemara. The second principle we see from this Gemara is which is going to be important for us, is the following, that the Gemara is telling us, though, that if the first gush kills the victim, so then he is chayav bis. Now, one could have argued that that shouldn't be the case, because listen, now that we see that there's a principle of grama by Ritzicha, well, when it comes to the first gush as well, Reuven didn't directly pour the water on the victim. All he did was remove a barrier, and then the water on its own flowed down and killed the victim. So why should we call this direct activity? Even the first gush should be called a grama. Yet the Gemara is telling us that when you remove the barrier and that first gush kills the victim, that's called direct activity. So with our second principle we see from this Gemara is that apparently that's called direct activity, that when you remove the barrier and the first gush comes down and kills the victim, we call it direct activity, and he's chayav bis. That's the second principle we see from this Gemara. Yeah.
Can you say the passage that you said last time about it being like a seamless
process? Okay, yes. Yeah. So Yona is beautifully connecting us to last time. But the truth is that you're right. I don't want to have to dredge up old memories, but that was one shita. But this is true of the old shitas. Even the shitas that don't hold the last week's stuff are going to, and we're also not by Hilfa Shabbos yet. Keep that in mind. We're in Hilfa Shabbos yet. So we're a few steps out of the game here. But that's the second principle we see in this situation. Now, just to give a little bit more of an insight into this halacha, so how do we understand this on a conceptual level? Why taka is it called direct activity? So Upanis wants to explain this follows, that we have a concept in halacha that's called kocha kagufa. Kocha kagufa means that what you do with your force is treated like you did it with your body. So let's say we're doing more gruesome stuff here. Let's say Reuven takes a dagger and he throws the dagger at the victim and he kills him. So we're all going to agree that that's called direct activity. Aye, but he didn't do it with his own body. He just threw it and it killed the victim. So we say kocha kagufa, that if you propel a force, that's like you yourself did it with your body. That's a general principle in halacha. So, but Rupanis used to point out that the concept of kocha kagufo applies in, in expanded form. There are other forms of kocha kagufo, and this Gemara is one example of it. In this Gemara, we're seeing an expansion of the notion of kocha kagufo, even though you're not propelling a force like the case with the dagger. You're just removing the barrier and unleashing a force that's included in the concept of kocha kagufo. So when I remove the barrier, I'm unleashing a force that's also considered to be direct activity, because that's included in the concept of kocha kagufa. So just a little bit of an insight into explaining this halacha, where we're categorizing the concept of unleashing the force is called direct activity. Yeah. See, he's saying that if you remove a barrier and you unleash a force, that's called kocha kagufa. The truth of the matter is a very good precedent, because let's say you shoot an arrow. Right, you take an arrow and you shoot it at the victim, and you kill him. So once again, we would all agree that that's, you're going to be chayav mis in that situation. That's certainly going to be chayav. But wait a second, when I shoot the arrow, I'm not throwing it like a dagger. I'm just releasing the arrow and it goes flying. So again, we're seeing that it's a similar concept. What is that? So guys, the Matthias, you're holding the string, or you're not holding the arrow also?
You hold the arrow.
We'll have to do some show and tell here later. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a difference, though, because with the arrow, you're the one who's causing that pent up
correct
energy.
Absolutely.
Whereas here, there's already an
100%. So the truth matters, I'll tell you the truth. I'm not going in steps, sir. You're right. Your partner's went in steps. He said, the most obvious goal was where you propel the force, you throw the force like the dagger, and then the next step would be by the arrow where you're releasing it. And then our case is now another scenario of kagufo, where you're unleashing a force. It's more indirect. So this is a real lima. This is a real lima. But for partners to point that also, I'll give you another case that's even in another angle of, what you might call indirect in a certain sense. Let's say you take a fire, you take a torch and you throw it at a building and it lands in the building and burns the building. So here, what's burning the building? It's not my force. I'm just getting the fire closer to the building, and then the fire, it touches the building and burning it. So is that called direct activity?
It's the same for the knife. You're throwing.
No. The knife.
You're throwing.
Then when you throw the knife, it's the force knife of your knife. It's your force of your throw that's causing the impact. When I throw a torch, the flame, when it sets a fire to the building, it's not my force that's causing it to happen. My force just gets the flame next to the building, and then the fire gets applied to the building and burns it down. So, regardless, you should just point out that the concept of kocha kagufo has a lot of different manifestations to it, and the name of the game of learning up these concepts is to learn how to categorize different ideas. Propelling a force is called kocha kagufo. Releasing a force, unleashing a force These are all different concepts of kofa kakupa. So there's just a little bit of a conceptual insight into what's taking place in this Gemara. Now, the Gemara in Chulin on Tezayin Amud Aleph applies this principle to the halachas of Shechita. The halacha is that when a person, a shochet, let's say, shechts an animal, it's only going to be kosher if it comes from the force of the shochet. It's a special rule that the shechita has to come about from the force, the koach ha'adam. But if, let's say, it would somehow happen by itself, where a knife would just slit an animal's throat by itself, and it would be a kosher shechita, do it in a way that would be kosher, it's still going to be no good. So let's say a person, a shochet, just drops a knife by accident, and it happens to split the throat and do a good shechita, it's going to be possible. There's a rule by shechita that you need koach ha'adam. So gravity in halacha is not always called a force. It's a, we go by perception. There are hacks on this issue, but dropping it's not called.
So if you drop an axe on someone's head, that would be considered.
This same Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses that case that Yonah just brought up. If, let's say, you throw up a rock and it lands down, or let's say you throw up a rock and it goes sideways and it kills somebody, like these halachas are analyzed there thoroughly. In the water case, right, that's what I'm explaining. Like gravity. So Avram's asking, listen, I'm dropping it, so I'm releasing the force. Is that what you're asking, essentially?
Yeah.
So in halacha, so gravity is not always considered to be a halachic force since it's not perceptible. But we shouldn't discuss this, how to categorize gravity. So there are discussions on this issue. But for Shechita, we consider dropping a knife to be happening by itself in terms of the rules of Shechita. So since it's not perceptible. If you can pull that off, if you can throw a knife and chef the animal, so I would give you shlishi, I'd be your best friend, and it would work. I would even eat the animal. Fine. Now, so with that in mind, so the Gemara in Chulin says the following thing. Let's say a person sets up the following contraption. We remove a barrier which causes water to flow down an incline. And then as the water flows down the incline, it causes a wheel to spin, and on the wheel is a knife. So now the knife spins and shucks an animal, and once again, we'll be this guy's best friend. If he pulls this off, like, okay, cool. He just shucked the animal, the perfect spot, and it's good. So says the Gemara, is that kosher? Is that possible? It depends. If it's the koach rishon, when you remove the barrier, the first gush of water causes the wheel to spin and shuck the animal, then it's a kosher shechita. We view it like he did it himself. If it's the koach sheni, if it's, you know, the first burst of water doesn't yet, you know, suffice to get the wheel to spin to pull it off, but the second burst of water does it and gets the wheel to spin and kill the animal, then it's not going to be good. It's like it's happening by itself. And the Gemara says, what's my basis for this distinction? Halachas Ritzicha. It quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, quotes that halacha about killing the victim by removing the barrier, then it says the same rules apply to halachas Shechita. If the first burst of water, just like by the first burst of water killing the victim, so that was called direct activity. So too, the first burst of water causes the shechita to take place. That's called direct activity. It's to be kosher. Whereas if the second burst of water does it, just like by shechita was called a grama, so too by, just like by resicha was called a grama, so too by shechita, it's called indirect and it's going to be no good. So this is our setup for tonight's discussion. We're bringing up the concept of kocha gegufo by hilchas resicha and by hilchas Shechita, and we're seeing that both of these partials have a type of grama concept. Grama by Ritzicha is pater. Grama, in a certain sense, you know, if you have indirect activity by Shechita, it's not going to be kosher. And in both cases, we're seeing that if you unleash a force, you remove a barrier, and you unleash a force, and this water comes down, if the first gush does it, it's called direct activity. By Ritzicha, it's called direct activity of Chayav Misa. By Shechita, it's called direct activity, and it's good. It's a good Shechita. And so with that background in mind, the question now becomes, what about by Hilcha Shabbos? By Hilcha Shabbos, if you can construct a situation, which we're going to come up with, very practical case, assuming, but for now, we'll speak about it theoretically, if we can come up with a case where you're moving a barrier and it unleashes a force that performs the malacha, is that going to be called direct activity or indirect activity? Should we compare it to Ritzicha and Shechita and call it direct activity and say that you're Chayav and Shabbos? Or perhaps it's going to have different regulations and it's going to be pater on Shabbos and treated as grum. That's the question that we're going to be analyzing now. Yeah.
Before we get there, why isn't, when you remove the barrier,
one miser,
now the water going, doing another miser, which now causes the neck to go and shut.
Are you asking by Shechita, you're saying even if the first gush, you're always asking question, even the first gush, but it still has to cause the thing to spin and cause the net to go around. So you're asking?
Yeah.
So that's a fair question. This gets into that discussion you were asking before about the exact distinction between cooperation and blockchain. So it's a very good question. But apparently we see from that as long as it was a seamless process, it is called cooperation. So it's a very good point.
So we said before that where there's this gap or this deficit, that it now removes, it now changes things. I don't remember this
I mean, so that was the owner was bringing it up from the last 2 weeks. Yeah, but this is in everybody. This even without the regime, this is seamless. There's no half secure. It's a seamless process. The water goes down.
You have to throw another.
I understand. Dobish trying to view this as a separate act. Listen, the water goes down, and then act number two, the thing spins.
Right.
But it's being treated as a seamless process. It gets into the issue as you know, I'm being ambiguous about how to define corporation versus blockchain. So it's considered to be direct. Okay, we can discuss this afterwards, but it's a fair point. Fine. So we have this in the machlokes between the Machzeh Avram on the one hand versus Rishon Zalman Orbach on the other hand. What's the deal by Hilchos Shabbos? Let's start with the Machzeh Avram. The Machzeh Avram says that Hilchos Shabbos is going to have different rules than Ritzicha and Shechita. Although by Ritzicha and Shechita, if you remove a barrier and only Shechor is called direct activity, but by Shabbos, it's called a grama. Shabbos has different standards. If you remove a barrier and you know a force is unleashed that causes a malacha to take place, that's called a grama, and it's going to be putter on Shabbos. What's the basis to distinguish? Why should we, you know, what's our basis to say Shabbos doesn't follow the rules of Shechita and Sicha? So he brings what I would call a light raya. And I don't know if this is the strongest raya, but he brings us a type of raya, which we'll spell out now. We'll see if the Chevra likes it or not. His raya is from Chassam Sofer in Hilchos Mikvaos. The halacha is, and moving over now to Hilchos Mikvaos, we're going all over Shas here. The din is when you're constructing a mikvah, so in order to construct a kosher mikvah, the rainwater has to naturally accumulate in the hole in the mikvah in order for it to be kosher. But if you draw the water, let's say in a bucket, and you carry it over and you pour it in, that's going to be no good. This is known as the psul of mayim she'uvim. You can't draw the water and pour it into the mikvah. It has to accumulate by itself in the ditch through some type of natural system. That's the basic, one of the ABC halachos of Hilchos Mikvaos. Now, the question becomes like this. Let's say I construct a situation where I have water that's being held back by a barrier, and I remove the barrier, and now the water goes down an incline into my mikvah. Is that going to be kosher? Is that going to be possible? Question being, well, how should we look at the situation? If we look at it like the person is causing the water to go down and manipulating the water, well, then that should be called mayim she'uvim, and it should be possible. We can't have the person manually bringing the water over. That would be no good. Whereas if we look at this as indirect, where you remove the barrier, and then on its own, the water flows down, so then we can call this a natural accumulation, and it's going to be kosher. Says the Chassam Sofer that this is kosher. If a person builds a mikvah, by removing a barrier and letting water flow down an incline, it's going to be kosher, and it's not called mayim she'uvim, because Hilchos Mikvaos doesn't follow the rules of Ritzicha and Shechita. Although by Ritzicha, if you remove a barrier, it's called direct activity. By Shechita, it's called direct activity. Hilchos Mikvaos has different regulations, and so if you remove the barrier and the water flows down, that's called indirect. We look at it like a natural accumulation. You're just removing a barrier, and then on its own, the water is flowing, and therefore it's perfectly kosher. So it says the Machzeh Avram. Look, we see from this Chassam Sofer that the rules of Ritzicha and Shechita are not universal principles. They're limited to Ritzicha and Shechita. We don't have to apply it elsewhere. And so Shabbos as well is going to be an exception. By Shabbos, just like by the Kvos, was an exception, was different. The Ritzicha and Shechita, it's called indirect. So by Hilchos Shabbos, if you remove a barrier and it unleashes the force, it's called indirect, it's going to be considered to be a grum. So this is all shita number one, the shita of the Machzeh Avram, that Shabbos doesn't follow the rules of Ritzicha and Shechita. Although by Ritzicha and Shechita it's called direct activity, by Shabbos it's going to be indirect, just like by Hilchos Mikvaos. Now, before we continue, so I just want to point out that Rabbi Soloveitchik from Yeshiva pointed out that this Chassam Sofer is extremely nogei l'halacha. So let me explain how almost all mikvahs have to rely on the Chassam Sofer to function normal. How so? So the following situation. Every mikvah needs to have a system of cleaning itself out. You want to have the ability to drain the mikvah water when necessary and do a nice cleaning and then refill the mikvah. The big problem becomes that when you drain the mikvah water and you clean it out, how do you refill the mikvah immediately? We don't want to wait 3 weeks for the next rainfall for 40 sa'ah to fall naturally, to wait for our mikvah and tell everyone to start going to, you know, the Chinese mikvah because the current mikvah is being cleaned out. So how is the mikvah possibly going to have this ability to periodically do a cleaning and refill itself immediately? The answer is you have to have a backup tank of water. So let's say at the top of the mikvah, you'll have the rainwater falls in into some kind of piping system, and there's going to be a reservoir, a backup tank at the top of the mikvah. That's what you're going to have. You have a backup tank at the top of the mikvah, and when you decide to clean out the mikvah, you drain the mikvah water, and when you're done cleaning it out, you're going to let the backup tank then fill up the mikvah. That's what you're going to essentially do. But how do you get the backup tank water into the mikvah? The answer is you have to remove a barrier. Essentially, there's going to be something blocking it from going down, right? It doesn't constantly just fall into the mikvah and overflow and flood. So our tank at the top of the mikvah is being held in place by a barrier. You remove the barrier when necessary. It flows out into the mikvah and fills it up. So when they clean out the mikvah, they drain the mikvah, they clean it out, they remove a barrier, and the backup tank now fills into the mikvah and refills it up. So every mikvah, whenever you're cleaning it out, you're relying on the Sam Sofer in order to clean out the mikvah. So we're just pointing out that this Sam Sofer is extremely nogeya l'halacha. Now, Savechik pointed out that there was once a mikvah in Chicago that didn't want to rely on the Sam Sofer. They wanted to have it hither, and they didn't want to rely on the Sam Sofer. So how did they come up with the system to avoid the Chassam Sofer? So it's pretty brilliant. What they did was like this. Let me first tell you the basic methodology of how they avoid the Chassam Sofer, and then I'll tell you the mechanics of what they actually did. The concept was like this. It's based on our sugya, what we're learning right now. What they did was like this. They have this backup tank of water that, you know, would accumulate extra water. And when it was time to clean out the mikvah, so they drain the mikvah, they clean it out, and now we're going to get our backup tank into the mikvah. How do we get the backup tank into the mikvah without relying on the Chassam Sofer? So let me first tell you the methodology and then tell you how they implemented it. The methodology was that they would remove a barrier and they set up a system where the first gush of water would get discarded. So the first gush of water would get discarded and only the second gush would get directed into the mikvah. So now that everyone agrees that the second gush, the koach sheni, is indirect. In our sugya, when we saw by Ritzicha, we saw by Shechita, that the unleashing of force is called direct activity, that was only the first gush. Only the first gush is called Ritzicha. Only the first gush is a good Shechita. The second gush is certainly indirect. If you kill a guy with the second gush, you're potter. If you do the Shechita with the second gush, it's not a good Shechita. So what they did was, even if the Chassam Sofer would be wrong, so to speak, and when you unleash the water, it's called direct activity, that's only the first gush. So they set up a system where they got rid of the first gush. The first gush would get discarded, and then the second gush would get directed into the mikvah, and therefore they didn't rely on the Chassam Sofer. That was the methodology for what they did.
And how do they differentiate between first gush and
second gush? So that gets into our machlokes. What's the difference in first gush and second gush? I'll be honest, I'm being ambiguous because we don't have so much time left. But I'll just tell you the system that they did. It's pretty cool what they did. What they did was like this. They drained the mikvah, and it was time to refill the mikvah. So they remove the barrier, and the water flows down. Now, at the bottom, it falls into some type of chamber, essentially. And at the bottom of the chamber is a very small drain. It was a tiny drain. So the water falls in, and it starts draining, but it clogs. It immediately backlogs because it was a small drain, and a lot of water is falling in, and it starts to backlog. So the first gush is draining out, but the water is backlogged. And as the water backlogs, so it reaches a certain height, it dislodges a ball. The ball then falls down and covers the drain. The water goes higher, and at a certain height, it gets directed into the mikvah. So that's what they did. It's pretty, you know, if you pay enough attention in like math physics class, you know, you can figure this stuff out. So the water went down. So just to clarify, just to get it one more time. The water went down into a chamber with a small drain. The first gush is draining, but it's backlogging. And then a ball gets dislodged, covers the drain, keeps going higher, and then gets directed into the mikvah. So the second gush is what went into the mikvah. Now, as cool as it sounds, when Soloveitchik said that it didn't work, apparently it clogged a lot, and therefore they discontinued it. But either way, it's another interesting attempt. It's a very interesting attempt to use the principles that we're learning tonight. It's really just this basic sugya. These basic pramkomos are the makoros for how to construct this stuff, and it's interesting stuff. Okay, fine. So, anyways, that was just an interesting aside to just appreciate this comes over. It sounds like out of left field, but it's actually extremely nogeya in the construction of Hilchos Mikvaos. Okay, fine. So that was all shita number one, the shita of the Machas Avram, that Shabbos doesn't follow the same rules as Hilchos Ritzicha, as Hilchos Shchita. Shabbos is called a grama when you remove a barrier. Okay. Comes along Shlomo Zalman Arva, and Shlomo Zalman argues on the Machas Avram. Says Shlomo Zalman that Shabbos is not going to be different than Ritzicha and Shchita. If you remove a barrier and a force comes out and does a malacha, it's called direct activity, and it's going to be chai. Why does he argue on the Machas Avram? So it's from what seems to be an explicit Gemara on Shabbos on Kuf Chaf Amabeit. Kuf Chaf is the place where we're learning Hilchos Grama. That's our home base over the last few weeks has been Daf Kuf Chaf and Shabbos. And the Gemara there brings the following case. It says, let's say you have a torch that's behind the door, and you want to open the door, but the issue is when you open the door, so the wind's going to come in and fan the torch and, you know, cause the fire to spread. Says the Gemara that it's going to be usher to do, you cannot be poseach adelis keneged hamedura. You can't open a door that's opposite a torch, because when you open the door, it's going to cause the wind to come in, it's going to allow the wind to come in, it's going to fan the flame, and you'll violate leches mavir. You're causing the fire to be expanded, to grow. That's the problem of leches mavir. Says the Shlomo Zalman, well, wait a second, in this situation, I'm not directly fanning the flame, I'm not walking over the fan and pretending as the emperor and fanning it. I'm just opening the door, and then the wind on its own is coming in. I'm removing a barrier, and the wind on its own is coming in and fanning the flame. Why is this asur? Says the Shlomo Zalman, we'll see from here that Shabbos follows the same rules as Shechita and Ritzicha. Just like by Shechita and Ritzicha, when you remove the barrier and you unleash a force, it's called direct activity. So too by Hilchos Shabbos, when I remove the barrier and I unleash a force, it's called direct activity. I'm unleashing this wind, which is fanning the flame. It's like I did it. It's aser deraisa. So that was all part one of today's shiur. Let's just quickly summarize. We'll stop for questions. We're analyzing one new aspect of the issue of grama versus asiya. By Ritzicha and Shabbos, by Ritzicha and Shechita, we're seeing if you remove a barrier and you unleash like a force of water, if it's the first burst, it's called direct activity. We're asking, what about by Shabbos? Machas Avram says Shabbos is different, and its basis is the Ksam Sofer. This Ksam Sofer by Hilchos Mikvaos says that the first gush is called indirect. Like on the Hilchos Mikvaos, we don't look at it like you did it yourself, like the water accumulated on its own. So Shabbos also is an exception to the rule. Whereas the Rosh Hashanah is now arguing, saying that no, Shabbos is not an exception to the rule, and his raya is from this Gemara that says if you open the door and the wind comes in and fans the flame, it's aser deraisa. Yeah.
It seems like the wind is not exactly analogous to the water, because whereas the water knows its way from there, like.
So the Gemara addresses that point. Yonah is saying that by the water, the water is right there. By the wind, who says the wind is right there? So the Gemara has the case in the Gemara is where the wind is present. It's right there. Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Okay. You said by the Zohar in the beginning that only the way done is by allowing the wind to wind up. When you fan a flame, you need wind. If you don't have wind, you cannot fan a flame.
So Zohar was trying to argue that this is the normal way to fan a flame, namely with wind. You're right, but Zohar was the Av Malacha. The original Malacha of Zohar was done with the wind. The original Malacha of Mavir, lighting a fire, doesn't have to be done with the wind. Done with the wind. You strike a match, you rub some sticks together. It doesn't need the wind. The definition of the Malacha doesn't need wind.
That's fine, but if you want to fan a flame, you need wind.
Right, but so,
you can't fan a flame without wind.
Malacha itself is just like a fire. Fanning a flame is a method of doing it, but it's not the wind.
But the situation is it. That's the only way to do it.
Bottom line, Yona's defending me. He can have extra Carlos tonight. Okay. So I want to make sure we finish up. So now in part two, we're going to go through two shilas in the postgame that are connected to these principles that we are setting down. Okay. The first shiloh that we're going to discuss is a shayla that was asked to Rav Avadia Yosef in his sefer Chovei Das. The question that was asked was like this. Let's say a person has a plant in his house on Shabbos, and you know, at nighttime you close all the window shades, but in the morning you want to let some nice sunlight into the room. The question became, if you open the window shades and the sunlight comes in, it's going to shine on our potted plant. It's going to cause it to grow. It's going to give it that, you know, photosynthesis. And therefore, maybe it should be a problem of Malacha's Zoraya. Zoraya is one of our Lamentis Malachos. It's the Malacha of planting. And any activity that promotes plant growth fits under Malacha's Zoraya. So if you cause the sun to shine on a plant, you're promoting its growth. Perhaps that should fit under Malacha's Zoraya. That was the question that we asked for Rav Avadia. Can you open the shades in a room that has plants in it on Shabbos? Yeah.
Considered substantial
that so Yonah's asking, is light considered substantial? So it seems to be if you would shine a light on a plant, that's going to cause it to grow. I think that we would consider that to be a problem of Malacha Zoraya. Yeah. Okay, fine, good. So Avram is bringing up the issue of Kavana, which Ravani definitely brings this up. So I wasn't going to mention that, but we'll mention that. Fine. So Ravani comes up with a number of mitigating factors to be makel in the Shaila. So he comes with a number of mitigating factors. So let's just mention a few of them. One of them is Avram's point. In this case, the person's not having kavana, presumably to cause his plant to grow. He just wants to have some nice sunlight in his room. Now it happens to be a psik resh benichale. This is inevitable that the sunlight is going to shine on the plant, and he wants his plants to grow. So Rav Avadia considers this to be a helpful factor. The fact that it's a psik resh, not direct kavana, is helpful, but it's not so helpful. It's one mitigating factor. It's a psik resha, albeit it's a psik resha benichale. So that is the point that Avram is making, and Rav Avadia makes in his tshuva. That's point number one. The second point Rav Avadia makes is, he says that even if the shade would be closed, the plant is still getting nutrients. The plant doesn't necessarily die just because it's not getting sunlight. So I don't know, we can test this out scientifically, but he says that even when the shades are closed, it's still getting some nutrients. When you open the shades and the sunlight comes in, so it's giving it more nutrients. It's enhancing its growth, but it's not going from 0 to 100. And so he says that's going to downgrade the shayla as well. That it's only going to be at the rabbanon of Zoraya, anything. It's not going to be the raisa, because it's still getting some nutrients from the room itself. And when you open the shades, it's just enhancing the situation. And therefore, that's a second mitigating factor.
Why this is Ari Goldman. So why would that be? If you're doing something in order to, I thought when you enhance more, but the growth, you're doing something in order to cause further growth. That's where everything is growing.
Arya is asking good points. He brings Raya's that if you improve Yanika, if you add more Yanika, that's an issue there of one. So there are Raya's that he brings that if something's already getting Yanika, it's getting a nourishment, but if you just give it more nourishment, so that's considered to be an issue of the Rabbanan. So we can discuss this after. That's a very good point that Rabbi Goldman's asking. Yeah, he's knocking it down to the Rabbanan. It's still Usher right now, but we're knocking it down to the Rabbanan.
So if you have a plant outside, which is getting nourishment from the sunlight, if you decide to pour water on it, help it get nourishment.
So that is Ari's question. Right. So Dov is asking, so can I pour water onto it? That's a different form of nourishment.
But Ravadi is
claiming that the nourishment of the sunlight is, there is some, I don't know the science here, but even when the shades are closed, that which the sunlight provides is still, it's still getting some of that nourishment. That's a different mode of nourishment. Now, sunlight, you know, plants need water and sunlight. It's different modes. So yeah, just because it's getting sunlight, I can't put water on it. But if it's getting sunlight and I give it more sunlight, so that's only necessary to Ravana. So Ravadi is saying that even when the shades close, it's still getting that type of sunlight from the air in the room. Okay, we could test this out, but.
So, not water.
It would only be us to run, absolutely. Avram's pointing out that that's 100% true halacha. If it rains already and the grass is freshly wet, and you pour more water on it, it's not so much that there's a problem in that situation. It's no yela for hilchos sukkah, let's say. If it just rains, can you remove your shlach and cause the water to flow onto the grass? So there's a basis to be made, but if it's freshly wet, you have to be careful how to implement this. But yeah, that's absolutely, it's true. Fine. I just want to finish up. You're right. That was correct. Fine. So that is the second mitigating factor. His third mitigating factor is the Machzeh Avram. And he says, but in this case, I'm not directly pouring light onto the plant. I'm doing it indirectly. I'm removing a barrier, which is causing the force of sunlight to come in. And according to the Machzeh Avraham, that's considered to be a grama. So that's a third heter in this situation. So you come to put three heterim. First of all, it's only psik resh, it's not direct kavana. Point number one, I'm not trying to make my plant grow. I just want sunlight. And the second point is you're just enhancing the nutrients, but it still had some nutrients when the shades were closed. And his third point is that this is a grama. According to the Machzeh Avraham, I'm removing the shade, and then the light comes in. It's a grama, and therefore in combination, so he's sort of making on the shaila. His final conclusion is that me'ikar din is mutter to open the shades, and it's fine. But he says, yesh lahachmir if the plants are on the windowsill. If the plants are on the windowsill, he feels that it's kedai to be machmir, and it's only appropriate to be mekel if the plants are not on the windowsill itself. They're somewhere else in the room, such that the light's gonna, you know, disperse, but not directly shine on the plants. So that is Ravadia's tshuva, which, as we're seeing, is based on our Machzeh Avraham. So that was all shaila number one. Shaila number two, and this will conclude. The big question that comes from the poskim is using urinals on Shabbos that have those hockey pucks, you know, like those disinfecting soap hockey pucks that my rabbi in high school called them hockey pucks. These disinfecting soap pellets that are in the urinals, when you flush it, the water comes down and it causes the soap, you know, what is that? Yeah, thank you. The soap dissolves in the water and it's supposed to disinfect the toilet. So the question becomes that very often they're colored and it's going to color the water. So you obviously have a blue, you know, soap pelt. And when you flush the toilet, the water becomes blue. Should that be a problem of malach of soveya? Soveya is the malach of coloring. We're coloring the water. Should that be a problem? So we have in this machlok is a poskim between the Sfaradim versus the Ashkenazim. We have Ben Sion Abishol, the Orla Tzion, and Ravadi on the one hand, versus Rishon Lezalman on the other hand. What's the halacha in this situation? Starting with the Sfaradim, so the Orla Tzion and Ravadi come up with a few factors to be makel on the Shaila. Why are they makel on the Shaila? So let's emphasize two main points. One point is the issue of Kavana, Avram's point, that when you flush the toilet, you're not trying to color the water. You're just trying to get the refuse down the drain. The fact that the water is becoming colored is not your kavana. And this is a psik resha d'lo'ifas light. You don't want that secondary effect. You really don't care whether the water is colored or not. And so that's one mitigating factor that you're not having kavana. It's a psik resha d'lo'ifas light that you don't care about. And then says Ravadi and Rabban Zion, we have a second heter, which is the Machzeh Avraham. In this situation, you're not directly causing the water to be intermingled with the soap. You're just, when you press the, you know, pull the lever and the water comes down, you're essentially removing a barrier, which causes the water to come down and then to mesh with the soap, which dissolves and colors the water. According to the Machzeh Avraham, that's a grama. You're not directly causing the water to mix with the soap. You're indirectly removing a barrier. Then the water comes down. That's considered to be a grama, and therefore it's another basis to be made. So based on these two points, in conjunction with other factors, the Ravadia and Ravensian are makel on using these toilets. That's the shita of the Sfaradi Gedolim. Whereas Rishon Lezalman argues on these poskim, and this is a real argument. He corresponded with Ravensian on the shaila. Ravensian sent his tshuva to Rishon Lezalman, and Rishon Lezalman directly argued on the two points. We just made two points why they were makel. First of all, take ratio the little ifas, but you don't care, you're not having kavana to color it. And second of all, grama. And Rishon Lezalman argues on both points. First of all, says Rishon Lezalman that he thinks that it's not so clear that it's a psik ratio the little ifas way, that the person doesn't benefit from the fact that the water is colored. Ask Rishon Lezalman, why do people buy colored soap? They could have bought colorless soap. You know, the colored soap is more expensive. The answer is because it looks nicer. It gives a certain aura to the room to have a nice colored soap. You want the water to become colored. It's spitzy. A hotel will have it colored. So he says, it's not so clear that it's a psik resha dilo ich basle, that you don't care about the fact that the water is colored. Why are you paying more money for colored soap? Get a colorless one. The answer is because it's nicer. The hotel has a nice, you know, blue soap and it looks nice. So he argues on the first point. He says that it's not clear that it's a psik resha. I have to finish up. I apologize. And his second point, he says, he argues on Grama. Says Shlomo Zalman that we can't apply the heter of Grama because Lishitaso, he argues on the Machna Grama. If you remember, who were our two Shitas on the Sugya in today's Shaila? It was the Machna Avram versus Shlomo Zalman. Machna Avram said that it was Grama when you remove a barrier. Shlomo Zalman argues on the Machna Avram. He says removing a barrier doesn't help. So when it comes to the urinals, don't tell me that this is called a Grama. It's called direct activity, and therefore he is machbir on the Shaila. So Shlomo Zalman was machbir to prohibit using the toilets with these hockey puck disinfectants. He felt that it was a problem of Soveya. Now, so the Shmir Shabbos says that a person should remove them before Shabbos, or if it's on Shabbos, so he should do it, he should remove it in a manner that's indirect. And when push comes to shove, so ask your local Orthodox male rabbi, but the if you look at the Shmir Shabbos footnotes, so Shlomo Zalman says that if you have no other choice and there weren't any colorless soap around and you only had a colored one, so there could be room to be makel. So I'm just saying that that when push comes to shove, I'll always mash me up above and he says to remove it. But if you mamish only had a colored one because you have to only have a colored one and there were no colorless ones, so then there might be some basis to be makel. So I'm just pointing that out to get that on the record. But their call, he's machber. He says to remove it before Shabbos ideally, or on Shabbos through a shinoi. Shkaya.
Wouldn't it be though?
Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos and a good summer.
You too. You too. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.